This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Imprint Companion. Yes, this is a podcast for physical media heads out there who love to spin those 4K and Blu-ray and old school DVD digital versatile, not video, digital versatile discs. And I'm here with the very versatile Alexi Toliopoulos. I'm, of course, Blake Howard. Welcome, Alexi. We are back for our second last Imprint Companion of the year. Holy shimoly.
Yeah, it's been a freaking huge year for Imprint. Like so many. I've been overwhelmed all year by the amount of movies.
You and I started this year going, oh shit, that's really like we had a little bit of a behind the scenes peek at what was coming. And we're like already like, Jesus Christ, this is a lot. This may be too much. And now I completely agree that it was too much.
It's been a lot, but it's been a lot of great discoveries, though, which is always what I value most from our ventures with Imprint and our journeys into the films known and unknown, obscure and unobscure. And this month is no exception. Lots of interesting movies, obscure and otherwise, but it's been a great exploration. And not only that, on the horizon, Blake, next month might be the biggest ever, not in quantity wise, but in what they're going for. We're going to wrap up the year by talking about the big 4K releases, including the gargantuan, definitive, all-time greatest edition of one of my favorite movies, The Neverending Story. I keep dreaming about getting this box in my hands. I'm thinking about it constantly.
It looks so heavy. I think in the socials, they like put out that how heavy, like physically heavy these things are. The batches are distributing around the world. People are getting their hands on them. We haven't yet got our hands on any testers. We're getting them in our hands. And the minute we have them, we're going to pour over them and we're going to talk to you about them. Lex and I are going to cover all four, but there's going to be an extra special bonus episode with my partner in crime on our show on One Hit Productions, Miami Nice, Katie Walsh, because she, as an LA person, as an island girl from St. Croix, one of her favorite Australian movies of all time is The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. So she's going to be excited to talk us through her experience of that movie when she gets her hands on it too. So a massive month, but we're catching up on two things. One, we were a little bit late to the party on the September batch of Imprint Asia. So we're going to cover one of our highlights from that. Lex is going to cover Brother, but we're also going to unpack just the, I guess, like a smattering, a sprinkling of the October releases. You guys would have heard a special bonus episode where I spoke to Sean Burns and Lindsay Romaine, who were part of the essay crew that wrote great essays for the Roman Polanski box set. So we're going to sort of skip over that one, but we're going to cover here today this amazing 4K Luca Guadagnino Suspiria box. Another sus movie, but Superstition from 1982, which was just like too bad to be true, but too good to be true as a sort of like a blind spot horror movie. We're going to cover Death Valley, which Lex has covered as well. We're going to go into the left field in the Blair Witch project collection and go to Joe Berlinger's sequel Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. And then we're going to quickly do a slight detour into the TV Movie of the Week collection, featuring movies that are under the length of 70 minutes. And maybe we lived in a better time when a movie was a 70 minute dream.
Oh, Take me back, mate. Take me back.
So where would you like to go first, Lex? Where are we going? Where are you feeling?
Should I kick things off with a little bit of Imprint Asia then?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is my big brother. He's here from Japan.
What exactly did he do in Japan?
You evil son of a bitch. If you kill him in one shot, he give you $10.
Don't you think it's time for your brother to move?
He likes it here.
You want to expand, you need me. I'm the man. You know how many people I killed? Jabs cross me, you'll be on that long list.
Well, this is one of the September releases from Imprint Asia. That bundle included Cliff Walkers, which is another Zhang Yimou, which Imprint has done such a great job in bringing out, nearly the full collection of Zhang Yimou films. I didn't know that was a tongue twister until I'd already said it. Then Ride On, which is a very recent Jackie Chan film, which is he plays a washed up stuntman. And I think a lot of people would have seen a clip from that film that went viral where he's recounting some of his life to the actor that plays his daughter in the film or something like that. So I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but I've been curious because that clip has been kind of all over the socials for the last year. But I had to check out From Takeshi Kitano, Beat Takeshi, Brother, which is his 2004 film that is kind of his English language debut. It's a bilingual film. It's set in Los Angeles, but it's also set in Japan. It's about Yakuza. It's also about gangs in Los Angeles. So it's a bilingual film. Basically, the plot line is abandoned by the brotherhood of his Yakuza clan. Tough guy Yamamoto is forced to leave Tokyo. He goes to LA in search of Ken, his younger half-brother. Alone and with a new identity, Yamamoto finds himself frustrated by foreign surroundings, especially since he doesn't speak the language. It also stars acclaimed American actor Omar Epps with a score by Joe Hisashi from Spirited Away. Now, I'm a Takeshi Kitano fan, and I would say in the last few years, I've made a bit of an effort to kind of make my way through some of his filmography that's been very hard to find in Australia.
Yeah.
Brother, I'm surprised I hadn't seen because I started watching it when I got my hands on the disc.
Like anywhere between, I would say, 1989 and 2005 and gangsters films internationally, I'm like, you know them, bro.
I'm pretty covered.
Like, if you made the letterbox list of that, like, it would be like 96% watched, you know?
I do. I have one. I've got a letterbox gangster list. You can check it out. I think it's, they did a thing called Underseen Underworld. And it was like, you pick 10 that are underseen gangster movies. And I did like a list of 50. So I could just have, I could have them. But it's on there somewhere. I think it's like Underseen Underworld. You can find it on my letterboxed account. Brother is one that I know that I've had the DVD of. I remember at the video store. So I had thought I'd seen it, but I had almost no memory of it from immediately. I kind of say the good things about it first. The violence. I loved the look, feel, and sound of every bullet hit in this gangster film. They're quite visceral. They're great squibs. And just each one packs like a punch. Like each one meant something. Each death, either it meant something to the story or you just felt the visceral nature of the violence. So it's quite enjoyable in that sense. What I think is kind of lacking in this English language debut is that it feels a bit sparse. Yeah. And like Takeshi Kitano films often aren't too heavy on the plot, but this one is about 2 hours in length and the sparseness doesn't really amount to much. Like the small plot doesn't amount to much. And the moments away from the plot I don't feel like you're exploring the richness. It doesn't feel like you're these characters don't feel imbued with richness. This world doesn't feel imbued with richness. So it just feels a bit sparse or a bit light or a little bit empty.
Yes.
But it's still kind of worth watching because you'll always get something out of a Takeshi Kitano film. For me, it was this wicked violence this time. But also, it's got a lovely small Omar Epps performance in it. And I think it's always worth watching when you see these big filmmakers from overseas, from foreign languages, try to make that leap into English language film, try to break it in like a bigger Hollywood world or whatever. It's always interesting. We've seen Pedro Almodovar doing it over the last few years after a humongous long career making exclusively Spanish language films. Two shorts feature coming out in this month. He's one of my favorite filmmakers as well. So it's interesting to always see that English language debut. Brother, I think is worth your time. A lot of people like it more than I do. But there's always something of value there in a Takeshi Kitano film.
It's cool that you sort of spoke about Omar Epps because I also love one aspect of being an international filmmaker. It's who you pick to be your English language star. It's like, what did Takeshi, like, how cool a compliment is that to Omar Epps, who is a guy who was huge for a period of time and is now not as huge in the Hollywood consciousness. But it's like, I wonder what Takeshi Kitano was looking at and going like, that guy. Like, I want that guy. Because surely there's other actors that wouldn't work with. So it's really interesting. I'm keen to check out that Asia, Imprint Asia batch. Haven't had a chance to go through it yet, but I definitely will. I'm very much looking forward to this huge January Imprint Asia batch coming. An erotic ghost box set, which is looking fantastic. Very excited about that batch. So we will definitely get to that in the new year. But let's jump over to Superstition. You guys are going to hear the trailer in a second, and then I'll come back and read you the back of the Imprint box.
Ghosts. Do you believe in ghosts?
I'm scared.
Do you believe in evil spirits?
Two kids were killed out there. One kid was gutted and slashed to death. The other microwaved.
Do you believe in haunted houses?
There are many houses on this foundation. All of them and their tenants come to bad ends.
Or do you think it's all just silly superstition?
I will not die!
Maybe you had better think again.
The two ladies had already started?
For if you enter this house...
So, just to give you the plot, I'm going to do it straight from the back of the box. It's in 1784, Elondra Sharak is condemned a witch and sentenced to death by crucifixion. But as Satan's daughter, her soul cannot escape to be destroyed and lurks in a lake known as Black Pond. Now, 200 years later, the young Reverend David Thompson and his family move into the vacant house by the lake where Elondra's demonic spirit emerges from the dark depths to seek vengeance. James Robertson's little 1982 haunted house, demonic possession, daughter of the devil movie is so much more coherent in the back of that box reading than it actually is in practicality.
Of course.
It is completely batty. There's all this kind of superstitious acts. There's lots of weird characters. There's lots of unbelievable, hysterical, gnarly deaths. There's lots of people ignoring really flagrantly awful things happening to their family members. This movie is an unintentional scream. Superstition for horror nuts out there is my pick of the batch. And this is a horror batch, right? We've got Blair Witch Project. We know right now that the Blair Witch Project, like there's been a big physical media splash and some amazing work on like original aspect ratios and things like that from, you know, other great distributors around the world. And obviously this Blair Witch batch, we've got Suspiria here, which is a classic horror remake. But as a genuine, you said it best, Imprint does to us, it surprises us. It provides us these beautiful cinematic curios that would otherwise be lost to the ages. This was a scream. It, Lex, if there's one movie that I want you to watch before the end of the year, it is this, because I think you will have the most fun with it. And as a person who I know is dabbling in writing more like original stuff yourself, I feel like you could look at the script of Superstition and write yourself out of its problems, like as an exercise. You know, like, how do I correct every wrong turn this movie took would be a fun exercise for people who are creative, like such as yourself. But this was a fun movie. It's so wacky. Its deaths are great. The menace is true, but it just feels like a conversation was had with, like, there were no bad ideas and they just threw them all in there and they were hoping that they'd all stick, but they do not cohere, for our pleasure. So wow. I would strongly recommend that as a river.
Right up my alley. And Blake, I might come back right with you right now with my horror pick of the batch, another ripper, a film called Death Valley.
Yes.
And I'm quite surprised you didn't see Death Valley because it's made by the Academy Award nominated director of Heat.
With Dick Burt Reynolds. Richards.
Yeah, the 1986 film Heat by Burt Reynolds, with Burt Reynolds in it. And also they did the 1975 Robert Mitchum Farewell My Lovely.
Yes.
But Death Valley was a film that was not on my radar at all, but it had that great cover, that great poster that felt kind of instantly iconic to me, with like this face with these sunglasses reflected face back in them. And Death Valley is what starts out as an ordinary vacation into Death Valley instead becomes a nightmare from which the travelers neither awaken nor flee. Their relationships to one another, the sanity, and finally their lives become the targets of a fiendish insanity in a huge surrealistic landscape where there is no place to hide. I think that's a very flowery, flourishing way to put this movie, because I think it's kind of the way that I would more accurately describe it. It feels like a movie that in part feels like it was made for kids.
Yes.
Because the lead of this film is a wonderful child actor, Peter Billingsley, from Christmas Story and also Iron Man. And he's like this young kid. His parents are getting divorced. And his father is played by Edward Herman from Gilmore Girls and Lost Boys.
Oh my God. Great pedigree from Edward Herman. Yes,
exactly. And then Catherine Hicks plays his mother from Seventh Heaven. And they got a lot of 90s old folk doing these things. But then they're breaking up. You never really see them on screen together at all. But the first scenes of this movie are Peter Billingsley and Edward Herman having like a divorced father and son day out on the town. They're going to the zoo. They're wandering around and stuff like that. And then he has like an actual heart-to-heart with his son about like the situation that they're going. And I can't remember the line, but it was a lovely little piece of dialogue where he said, I stopped being the man that your mother fell in love with or something. And you go, wow, that's nice writing for this kind of like...
Nice writing for a pulpy, weird movie,
And then it essentially devolves into this boy goes on holiday with his mother, her new partner, who is played by Paul LaMatte from American Graffiti. And I think Bad News Bears 3. I think he's the guy from that one. Then it kind of becomes a Hick slasher.
Oh,
and
great.
You've got Stephen McHattie, who is like playing this killer, deranged killer, going after them. But it's all for the child of a little kid. But then it's got all the grubby slasher trimmings of like, there's nudity in this movie. There's teenagers getting killed as they're having sex and stuff like that. But then it's the most innocent looking boy, Peter Billingsley, seeing it all. And then Wilford Brimley pops up in it as well. So it's a very interesting early 1980s kind of horror oddity, because at one point it feels like a kids' TV movie. Another point feels like a grubby slasher, but I had such a good time with this film. It is my discovery of the batch, dare I say, my discovery of this batch that has a lot of movies that I would consider my favorite movies of all time.
Well, from a discovery about death, let's get deadly. Let's jump over to give you the highlights of the TV of the week, TV movie of the week collection, number one. This is one of the most exciting things that Imprint is doing, because especially around, I mean, we were there for the kind of the latter part of this as we were growing up, but TV movies of the week that were these sort of short, often like lauded with kind of former huge stars making a movie for an hour and a half slot of normal commercial television, meaning that the length of it could be about 70 minutes long. They make these like little pulpy things, usually things that aren't don't probably warrant a 2-hour movie, but certainly have, there's enough of an idea in there to make something. They usually use TV level production. But what's been awesome about this mini collection they brought together is three movies. The one I'm going to talk to you about, I'll talk about last, but so they've got Scream, Pretty Peggy, which stars Betty Davis, right, in this box set. They've also got Baffled, which stars Leonard Nimoy and Susan Hampshire. And then you move on to the film I want to cover, which had the legendary Lloyd Bridges and Janet Leigh called The Deadly Dream.
Now, amazing.
This little 71-minute treasure is essentially for you Tenet Nolan heads out there would say is like a bit of a temporal pincer of a movie where a scientist, Dr. Jim Hanley, played by Lloyd Bridges, he has these recurring dreams that he's being pursued by a mysterious tribunal for something he's not aware of he's done, and soon he realizes that his dreams may become a reality. And so you're watching this movie, this guy living his life, and then having these sequences of dreams, and you're waiting until these stories eventually interconnect because it feels like it's a dream. You realize that it is then sort of his impending reality. It's so nice to put on a movie that is done in 71 minutes, sort of effortlessly, that has decent production, that has like a morsel of a story. It almost feels like this could totally be like ramped up into something much bigger and much more ambitious, and probably in some ways has inspired other things. Like it probably snuck into people's brains, other filmmakers' brains. They watched it as a movie of the week. They used to just come onto television and then disappear. They'd be in an archive somewhere. So again, this is one of those real archival beauties that Imprint have done, which is like bringing these TV movie of the weeks back to life and seeing great actors still doing work. And it was kind of, you know, it was kind of a Netflix movie of its day, you know? So I really love these collections. I love this little movie. And I'd really strongly recommend if you do get a chance and you just love, like, you've got that nostalgia. Like, I know that some of our listeners are a little bit older than me, sort of like my brother's age or, like, older. And, you know, my brother's about 8 years older than me. So it's like anyone in that age range, this was like, this is how you defined your week. There were TV movies of the week that had 70 minutes, not the theatrical movies that were cut down to smithereens that we watch, you know, where whole scenes of whole movies and whole characters were cut out because they were trying to fit them in time slots. These were designed for this. And all sorts of genres, wonderful and weird. I'm a big fan of it. So yeah, this is one where I was like, I have to get my hands on this. Even if I was, if I was not reviewing for Imprint, this would be one where I get it because I'm like, what a beautiful curio to have in your collection.
Mate, I hope you chuck a couple of these on with your brother over this festive season.
I would love to watch some of these because I reckon I've watched about 20 of them with my brother over the years. So I reckon
what a great thing to have a nap with than nap to, you know?
Dude, lunchtime, couple of beers. It's that hot part of the day in the Australian summer. You don't want to be out in the sun. 71-minute nap time, primo movie. Here we go.
Beautiful stuff. And that's what you need a TV movie for. Plot is unnecessary. You're watching it for whatever else it is giving you, vibes perhaps or otherwise.
Yes.
Stilted performances, that's what you go to the TV movie vintage classics for. But I'm very keen to get into that because I have a great fondness for the telemovie. And I think it's been beautiful getting access to a lot of these lost relics via Imprint over the last little while. But this set is just killer. Blake, before we wrap things up, there's two major picture releases in this batch.
Yes.
Suspiria in 4K.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Thank you.
I'm still making my way through it, but the picture looks fantastic. I'm very excited by this release. There's a great video essay by the wonderful Alexandra Helen Nicholas on there.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a contender for one of the big releases of the year. But on the other end of the big
horror batch, before we jump into the your secondary batch, I just want to shout out Alexandra Helen Nicholas's great work on this is fantastic. It's the one thing that I watched besides the beautiful 4K disc, because I'd only ever gotten to see it. I didn't get a chance to see it at the theater. I saw it on television. Really? So I missed it.
Oh,
so
with ads on TV.
Not with the old ads, but I just watched it on like Prime or something like that when it came out. So Amazon has at least released it because it's an Amazon original. There's Tom York's Spells, The Music of Suspiria is a video essay by film writer Philip Jeffries. And I really loved it because I'm a huge Tom York fan. And, you know, obviously Johnny Greenwood out of the original Radiohead crew has like more seamlessly transitioned into some of the most gargantuan scores of the 21st century. There Will Be Blood being probably the numero uno of that. Or the master. But Tom York Spells, The Music of Suspiria is another banger on here. And I mean, I think Alexandra Helen Nicholas is one of Australia's premier and probably the world's premier horror writers. So that was extremely worthwhile. But that essay too, I was like, that's a banger. But it was just, this is a great, another contemporary one getting a real genuine big release. It was like one of those nice ones you see when Criterion release something more contemporary and give it a really thoughtful release early. So let's finish with where you're going.
Yes, well, we kind of have these dueling editions of the Blair Witch Project arriving in a big way in the physical media realm. The Blair Witch Project, the original film, is one of my very favorite horror films. I think what it does, nothing has ever done it better than that. From the verisimilitude of the actual found footage feeling to the way that was enhanced by probably the greatest marketing a film has ever received that becomes part of that film.
That it was real. This is real. Like there was a time in our lives where that was a real thing. And I think every one of my friends on the opening weekend in Australia at the time it was released went to see the movie. And many of us still believed that it was real because the internet wasn't as prevalent. You couldn't just second screen it immediately and go, is this real or is this BS? And magnificent, magnificent.
It'd be awesome to plug in a desktop computer and a modem into a Hoyts watching it. This will go, we've got to check this up.
Oh my God. Just like the old dial-up modem starting up and distracting everyone. Fantastic.
Exactly. But I love the Blair Witch Project. I probably watch it every few years. My prized Dendy release Blu-ray that I had for like 15 years has had quite a good bashing. So I've been very excited to get into this. I've not had a chance to check out the second site. Maybe I never will, because I am quite happy with what I have checked out on the imprint release, which is something I've never seen before. Book of Shadows, The Blair Witch 2.
It's a film
that I've never seen, the much reviled sequel to The Blair Witch Project. Because obviously I've heard it's bad, just as you all have. But
I took a girl on a date to see this movie.
You did?
Yes.
I did. Is this your lovely wife, or did things not turn out so?
Things turned out as the reputation of the Blair Witch Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2 turned out.
Okay, interesting, interesting.
Catastrophic.
Catastrophic, well, you take a risk going to the sequel of a horror classic that was made 1 year after the original film came out. It is quite a risky move.
It is. And can you tell, I think Blair Witch as a cultural touchstone has like permeated culture, right? So people know that it's like it kind of launched the found footage phenomenon that like went into so many other movies, and some of them great, like Paranormal Activity in some examples and some of them not so great. But can you tell people about the fundamental thing when you turn on Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2? What is it, Lex? Is it a found footage movie?
It is not a found footage movie.
No, it's not.
It's not a found footage movie. It does a few very interesting things because I didn't really know much about it.
Yeah.
All I'd never known that it was like a cash-in basically to get it quickly building on the hype of Blair Witch, and it was not the original creators. I know that there was once upon a time a competition to a few interesting filmmakers to kind of get their pitches together, and the best one would be turned into the movie. But that's not how things worked out anyway, because the person that gets the job is a very well-renowned filmmaker, Joe Berlinger, who is best known at this time leading up to this project for making the documentary Paradise Lost, The Child Murders at Robin Hood Hills, which is, he's kind of known as...
An amazing film if you've never seen it. Joe Berlinger, an incredible director. Mm. The Paradise Lost series becomes a sequence of three films. It's Paradise Lost, The Child Murders at Robin Hills, then it's Paradise Lost 2 Revelations, and finally finishes off much later with, oh my God, what is the third Paradise Lost? Paradise Lost Purgatory. And he's an incredible, and you know, was a director of an episode of Homicide: Life on the Street. Did Metallica's Some Kind of Monster, but was a huge.
He made this another
huge documentarian.
Documentary film, co-directed Brothers Keeper, which is like one of those iconic documentaries you may or may not have heard about. And now he works a lot still in true crime. Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey is out right now. He did Jeffrey Dahmer tapes, the Ted Bundy tapes. So he's like kind of like in this space. So he is an interesting person to go to for this. And I find it even more interesting that he goes out of like the faux documentary world to make a film. But the premise of it is the Blair Witch Project was an actual film that was released. Whether it was true or not is almost ambiguous in this film, but it plays on that. And I think buying into that premise quite quickly, I was able to get quite on board and have a good time with like what the kind of very late 90s new metal thrills and oddities that are here in the Blair Witch Project 2, Book of Shadows. I don't know, man. Like, I think it's one of those sequels that I think I had always imagined to be crummier and a hackier cash-in.
Yes.
Because it takes these weird conceptual swings right at the start on like the fundamental level of what a movie is in this. I have to have some respect for it. And because of that respect, I was able to find a lot of joy and interest in this film. So I really do recommend checking out Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2.
I remember seeing it, and I remember being puzzled, frustrated somewhat that it wasn't just going to be some kind of continuity. But in its own weird way, addressing Blair Witch as an artifact, almost like Scream does with the fake film Stab in the Scream series that are based on the Woodsboro murders, does its like own kind of, it's as influenced by Scream 2 as it will be by any of those other found footage sequels that we see later, which is like these ongoing experiments of how to keep finding footage, essentially. And like even the found footage stuff goes off into the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, starring Jessica Biel. It's interesting. I remember being so interested by it, and I watched it like probably, I don't know, I would say like 10 years ago, after like seeing it like a year after it came out in high school with a girlfriend in high school. And I was like, that was not as bad a movie. It was definitely doing something. It was really trying something different, and it's got some interesting content in there. And it becomes even more of a fascinating curio because Joe Berlinger, the guy behind the Paradise Lost series, just, it's crazy.
Very interesting. Worth watching. Worth investing your time into. Very glad that it's kind of almost feels like a bonus feature on this.
Yes.
But they're not, because there's so many video essays dedicated to it. They've like really packed it out. I love to see some respect paid to a film that has never really been respected.
Yes.
And includes a new interview with Joe Berlinger himself, interview with the director of photography, and then kind of like a lot of the contemporary to the film marketing materials, like another fake documentary and all those kind of things that are there. So like those archival featurettes, those archival fake and faux docos. It's a great little set, and I am interested to see what else is out there right now about Blair Witch, because it's a film that I'll watch for the rest of my life over and over again. But my time with Blair Witch 2 was of so much value. So thank you very much, Imprint, for getting that finally into my eyes.
Thank you, Imprint, for your great releases and your beautiful cinematic rediscoveries and curios. Thank you, Lex.
Hey, Blake, can you pick up that last bit again from when you started talking? Because I couldn't really hear you on the mic, think it was, it was not picking you up very well.
All right, cool. Let's start that again. Thank you, Lex. I got to thank Imprint. Thank you, Imprint. Lex is right. Thank you, Imprint, for your amazing cinematic curation onto physical media as always. Thank you, Lex, I want to thank you as a partner in physical media this year for your dedication to the maddening streaming through physical media, picking apart all of these curio releases with me. This is our second last episode. We're very excited to get to our last episode. We'll come to those last maybe episode or a couple of episodes for the final batch of the year, being the November batch, this bumper 4K batch. We'll come to those with a lot of enthusiasm and maybe some of our favorites, sharing our favorite physical media of the year. Thank you, mate. This has been great. Where can people find you? Any particular shout outs for stuff that you're doing right now that is good, because people are going to be hearing this very, very nearly when we've recorded it.
Very, very soon. Well, this week on my podcast, The Last Video Store, joined by two very special guests, two icons of Australian cinema, Hugo Weaving and Daniel Henschel. They're talking about the new release film that they're both in called How to Make Gravy. And then each of them will talk about some of their favorite films of all time. And then I shall provide them with a bespoke customized recommendation based on their taste. And I've got a very good dark Christmas classic that if you've never seen, Blake, I think you should make it your priority to watch this season. It's a film that I guarantee you'll fucking love. My recommendation for that.
I'm excited. Very excited.
And so that is The Last Video Store. That is what I've got at the moment. I just recorded some great episodes that will be coming out, some before the end of the year, some at the start of next year, but that's my home base at the moment. And Blake, you have just written a piece that I will be reading as I dip into the world of Nod, as I sit in bed and read before I fall asleep, with Bright Wall, Dark Room. Tell us about your Goldstone piece.
Yeah, look, Bright Wall Dark Room is an amazing independent publication in the US. It features some of the best cinematic minds that are kicking around everywhere now. That so many of the writers at Bright Wall have gone on to write other great things. Roxana Haddadi, Travis Woods, Lindsay Romaine, Fran Hoffner, Veronica Fitzpatrick. Just absolutely incredible cachet of a bunch of people. Ethan Warren, former writer there, and also produce a podcast with a bunch of those people. It's been a goal of mine to write about that. But Lex, as you know, like, I like to get obsessive and be pretty definitive when I get a chance to do that. And it came time to selecting something for their amazing neo-noir issue for November. And you and I together had the very special honor at Screen Drafts of drafting 21st Century Australian Cinema. I drafted this film, Goldstone, Ivan Sen's sequel to Mystery Road, as number one, because I have such an unwavering love for this thing. And they gave me an opportunity to write about it. And so I'm really proud of it. It's genuinely one of the things I'm the most proud of that I've ever written. And I think that for you, when you read it, there's a lot of like implicit context. And I think anyone who's listening to this who's an Aussie, there's a lot of implicit context about our history and about our culture and about all those sorts of things that I had to very deliberately address, because I knew it was going to be an international audience, particularly an American audience that may not have any clue. So I took a lot of care to be as descriptive and as historically accurate and contextual around some of the dark history of Australia's colonialization and our treatment of our, you know, First Nations peoples here, as well as talking about Ivan Sen's cinematic calligraphy. It's a beautiful film. Hopefully you enjoy the piece if you want to read it. Otherwise, we are finishing a bumper year at One Heat Media Productions with Minhunter, which is our Manhunter series. I've recorded all but two episodes of this bad boy right now. Audio episodes are on the main feed. Video episodes are over at our Patreon for a stack of things that are going to be popping up all into the new year, until the end of the year. Big stuff coming up. But if you do anything today, Goldstone, which I titled There Is No Next Time.
I mean, it's a beautiful film, great pairing. If you've never seen Goldstone, do you recommend reading your piece first or just going watching the film, then getting into the piece?
Have to have seen the movie. I think you would get a lot out of it if you're an international listener to read it first, because there's a hell of a lot of context in there that would absolutely probably fly over your head. So you're in less danger. If you're an Aussie or a Kiwi or someone from this part of the world and you've had experience in Australian culture, I would say that see the movie first. And if you're familiar, passingly familiar maybe with Mystery Road or the Mystery Road series, check out Goldstone, read the piece, seek out Goldstone. It's an amazing film, genuinely amazing. It's on, if you're in Australia, it's on ABC iView for free. You can just watch it. Beautiful. So go and check it out. But yeah, the piece is gargantuan. It's smaller than it was originally, but it's a big piece, and I'm really proud of it. And from what I hear, I'm immediately going to be followed by a piece by my dear friend Travis Woods for this Nia Noir issue to close it out.
Beautiful. Well, that is it for Imprint Companion for another episode. We'll be back very, very soon. As soon as we get our mitts on this huge 4K bundle, dare I say we get together and unbox them in each other's company.
We should do that, and we should go and discover that really amazing, what was that place, little Indonesian place you discovered near me?
Oh yeah, let's get back in our DMs and find that.
let's find that snacks after unboxing, the two greatest things of all time.
Absolutely. Well, Blake, my pleasure to spin those discs with you,
as always, brother.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.